Blog Talk Radio.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose or diagnose. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones.
Welcome to another edition of the Coach Mike Jones Show podcast, episode 84. Today I got 42-year veteran El Presidente Rudy Gonzalez. How you doing, brother?
How you doing, Mike?
I'm doing great. Thank you so much for your time and your interview today. We appreciate you.
Happy WrestleMania weekend.
It is, my goodness. All right, time for the first-timer question. What got you into the crazy world of professional wrestling?
Easy answer. I have no idea. I went on the suggestion of my high school football coach to train with the local wrestling promotion that was starting a wrestling school in between football. My Christmas break and the spring session of college. And so they happened to start on June 2nd, 1982, and I was free. So I wanted to go train with them, and I wasn't supposed to go back to school for 2 weeks. So I figured I'd do the 2 weeks and then go back to school. And I never went back. And I got into the wrestling business, and long story short, I fell in love with it, and I've never left, man. I love it. I enjoy it. If I'm gone for too long or not wrestling somewhere or something, I feel a void, you know. So, I mean, I love it. I enjoy it. I don't have any regrets getting into it.
Awesome. Okay, and in your lifetime, growing up, who are your heroes? And that includes ordinary life, sports, music, and wrestling.
Sure. So, I mean, I guess number one, and I really wouldn't call him my hero, but I guess he was like everybody else, was my dad. He took care of us, and all he did was work. And then growing up, I guess like I was a huge Dallas Cowboy football fan, but I mean I enjoyed all football. So I had like, you know, Roger Staubach, Robert Newhouse from the Dallas Cowboys, Earl Campbell from the Houston Oilers, Daryl Royal. He was a coach at the University of Texas. I mean, I had a wide variety of people that I like looked at. Kiss. I was a big Kiss, Kiss fan. But as I grew up, I kind of grew out of that stuff. Tully Blanchard, honestly, and it has nothing to do with wrestling. Tully Blanchard was one of my heroes growing up also. When I was in the eighth grade, I used to read the newspaper with my dad, and I would always read the sports section. And Tully was a high school quarterback here, and he played for one high school. And Tommy Kramer, who played for the Minnesota Vikings, played for another high school, and so I'd always follow Tully, you know, in his exploits of college football or high school football quarterback stuff, and then he went to become a wrestler. And when I started working for, coincidentally, his dad, Joe Blanchard, you know, I guess that's what kind of like hooked me in, because during the time that I was helping the wrestling promotion, I was training with the wrestling promotion, I was also helping them, and I happened to catch a match with Wahoo McDaniel and Tully Blanchard, and I think that's what hooked me. I mean, it was, I really wasn't a wrestling fan growing up, but, you know, I thought, you know, like a lot of people, I thought it was BS and whatever, but I watched this match, and Tully and Wahoo just beat the heck out of each other for, you know, 20, 30 minutes or whatever it was, and I'm like, man, if this is fake, man, this sure is some real fake, I mean, fake or whatever. And that's what caught me in, man. And then later on, there was this big feud with this guy, Eddie Mansfield and Scott Casey. And their deal ended with a hair versus hair match. Eddie Mansfield got his head shaved, and the reaction from the crowd from that and knowing what I know now, seeing how he worked it, how he milked it, you know, he milked the situation. I mean, he had people eating out of his hands, and you know, that also brought me in a little bit deeper.
Yeah, and then that leads to one of my other main questions on most memorable matches that you've seen. You've already mentioned a couple. Is there any other memorable matches that you want to tell the fans about? And then, of course, we want to know about your most memorable matches.
Sure. So, so back in the day, like even now, people talk about it. I run a group page called Southwest Championship Wrestling, and they still talk about it. There was a match with Tully Blanchard and Terry Funk, and if there was any doubt in my mind that wrestling wasn't legit, this erased it all. Tully Blanchard got a hammer and tore Terry Funk's ear off. I mean, just tore it up. Wrestling speak, you know what I'm saying? And people were going nuts. I mean, and I was like, my mouth dropped open. I couldn't believe what I was seeing. These two men were wrestling, fighting, and then it went so far where one of them was tearing the other guy's body part off, and I could have swore right then and there, man, this is this is a real deal, man. This is like, holy cow, you know. And now, you know, this page that I have, I mean, I get guys all the time asking, does anyone have any footage of that? And I've seen it live, and I saw it on video, but it was a tape that we had at the office, and I played it, and I don't know where those tapes are. I mean, WWE didn't buy them or anything, so I don't know where they're at. But people still ask about that, and they still talk about that match.
My goodness.
For me, man, I guess most memorable matches are the matches I've had with my students. Watched them most, and most notably, I know their names are going to come up, is Brian Kendrick and Brian Danielson. I mean, watched them walk in the door the first day and, you know, wet behind the ears, and they have no clue what's going to happen to them. We have no clue what they're, you know, where they're going to, you know, where all this is going to lead to. And they came in and trained their butts off. And then, you know, it became customary where I would give guys their first match. They had their first match with me. And so my first match with Brian Kendrick was actually on TV. Sean had his little TV show. So his first match with me was on TV, and then Brian Danielson's first match was in a town about 100 miles south of San Antonio called Cotulla, Texas, and we probably had about 30 people here, and Sean just, you know, we were putting the card together, and it was basically me and another guy, maybe two other older guys, and the rest were all students, and Sean said, let's see what Brian can do, and I was like, all right. He goes, you mind work with him? I said, no, not at all. And so I told Brian, you know, not if they didn't have wrestling gear, and we didn't care. I mean, they had their tennis shoes and shorts and T-shirt, you know, and I said, you're wrestling today. And Brian was like, what do I wear? I go, you're wearing it. just take off your shirt. And he goes, what do we do? You know, and this is like the first part of, you know, the beginning of planning out matches and stuff. And I don't do that stuff. So I was like, I don't know, whatever you want to do. We'll call it in the ring. And so Brian, he might have been, I don't know if he was nervous or not. I know I wasn't. But, I mean, we, you know, that in itself is an art of calling a match during the match. And it's a little bit more difficult calling the match while you're doing stuff. The guy runs by and he goes by you, say clothesline, and then you give him a clothesline, and as you go to pick him up, you know, you're saying fight back, or, you know, just little things like that. And so that's what we did, and Brian did really well, man. He did so well that I told him, do, you know, I gave him like a couple of minutes. I said, do whatever you want to do, man, whatever, you know, go. And he went to town on me, and he blew my ass. I don't know if I can curse, but he blew my butt up in that 2-3 minutes, man. I was like, oh, my God, what did I just do? And so we did our match, and, you know, I beat him. And then I was just so gassed. I was so out of breath. I go to the back. I go through the curtain. Sean's there, and Sean's like, how do you do? And I just go, I go by him. I go out the back door, and I'm just gasping for air. I'm like, And then Sean comes back there, and he's like, you know, how do you do? And I'm like, he's great, man. He's great. And then Brian came back, and he goes, Coach, you okay? And I didn't want Brian to see that I was blown up. I'm supposed to be the coach. So I composed myself really quick, and I'm like, yeah, man, you're all right. You're all right. You did good. Good. You listened well. Good job. And then I went back inside and found myself a quiet corner and just like, But, yeah, any matches that I've had, you know, Brian Kent, you know, any of the students, not, you know, not just those two, but it's always good for me. It means a lot to me. I mean, I'll let you know, man. I don't consider myself, you know, the second coming of Ric Flair or anything like that. I was a decent worker when I was working. Sean said he respected what I did and stuff, and I did a good job. That's why I was a trainer. But I never considered myself a great work or anything like that. So when I see guys, when I'm able to work with my own students and see how well they do, that blows me away more than I can even tell you. It just blows me away that this guy here, me, produced this talent. And when I see, you know, Brian Danielson still on TV 23 years later, and still having these, you know, Meltzer 5-star matches, you know, I just like find a little place and just, you know, get watery eyed and think, man, I really did good with this kid, or he's really doing good, you know.
Yeah, what a blessing. And my goodness, I got a question related to this from the office of Turnbuckle Turmoil and Sign Guy. He wants to know more about your being the trainer for Shawn Michaels School.
So what happened was, so years ago, I'd only been wrestling for a year, and so Sean tried to get into the Southwest Wrestling Promotion. He was younger, and Joe didn't want to have anything to do with him because he was young, I believe. I think it's just because he was underage. And then when he became 18, they got a hold of Jose Lothario, and Jose trained him. And actually, the old school way of doing it was Jose is credited for training him, but the guy that actually got in the ring with him was a guy named Ken Johnson. So, and Jose would sit outside the ring and say, do this, do that, and Ken would go through all the hands-on stuff. So now I fast forward to 1999, and Sean runs the school. He had just come off back surgery, so he's outside the ring sitting in the chair, and he's saying, do this, do that. And Jose's with him. He hired Jose and Ken Johnson, more out of respect because they broke him in. So he hired those two guys. And me, like I said, I pulled him to the side one time, and I asked him, why am I here? And he said, because I respect your work, and I've seen you through the years, and I want you as my trainer. So I'm not exactly sure what happened, within a month, Sean and Jose had a fallout. And then since Jose and Ken were buddies, I don't know what happened with that either, but then Ken left a little while after that, and then I was the only one left. I was, you know, Sean. And when Ken left, me and Ken were buddies. And so when Ken left, he looked at me and he said, "Are you coming?" And I'd known Ken for 15 years. And I'm like, no. Because this was my job. This wasn't just something I was.
Yeah.
This is my job now. This is how I looked at it. And so he said, "All right," and he left. Paul Diamond came in for a little while, but Paul's main job was to book the towns and stuff like that and help with TV. And so when Sean brought me in, all I wanted to do, I'd already been in the business for 15 years or so. All I wanted to do was train guys. I didn't want to wrestle no more. But the way the TV stuff turned out, we had students, and then we had some older guys, and I was one of the older guys that was helping do TV. So my main concern was just training the guys, and I'd get there in the morning. We'd have training from 9 to 12. So I'd get there at 9 o'clock, training would end at 12, and then some guys, like Brian Kendrick and Brian Danielson, Lance Cade, a couple of other guys, they asked to stay later, so I'd stay later. And I'd have to leave finally because my kids were in daycare, so I'd have to go pick them up, drop them off, you know, take them home, wait till their mom gets home, and then I'd come back to the gym, and the boys would meet me at the gym again. And we trained from 7 in the evening till 10 o'clock at night, 12 o'clock at night, 1 in the morning. You know, I mean, I enjoyed doing that. And then we'd come back to the gym again at 9 in the morning. But Sean gave me pretty much free rein. I mean, I put the curriculum together, which is what they used in Tough Enough. There was a point where WWE called him one day and said that they were going to be in San Antonio. They were going to be in Austin, which is like 60 miles from San Antonio. They were going to be in Austin in 6 weeks, and they were going to give two spots to Sean's students. So Sean said, pick two guys, and they're going to get a tryout match before SmackDown or whatever it was. And so I narrowed it down to four guys, which was Brian and Brian, Lance Cade, and this guy named Shooter Schultz. And, I mean, it was nitty-gritty stuff. I mean, if a guy sneezed during push-ups, you're out. I mean, it was just – we had a group of kids that were just very competitive. Besides those four guys, there are like five, six, seven other guys that were just as good. They just maybe were missing something. They were just like, maybe just something stupid. Just maybe a guy, when he took bumps, he didn't tuck his head right or something. And so, you know, I mean, we were producing some pretty good guys. And, so it came down to four guys, and I told Sean, "So I can't pick out two." And he says, "You have to." He says, "They're only giving us two spots." And so I said, "Well, give me another couple of days." So 2 days go by, and I'm like, "You know what? You do it. You're it's your school, man. You pick them." So we went through a couple of days of training again, and Sean watched, and he said, "I can't pick two either." He said, "Let me try some." So he called up Vince, and Vince said, "Go ahead and put all four in." So they had a tag team trial. It was Brian Kendrick and Lance Cade, I believe, against Shooter Schultz and Brian Danielson. And after they did their little tryout match, it was me, Sean, the four boys, Vince, Shane, JR, and I want to say Johnny East, but maybe he wasn't there yet. I don't remember. But Vince said, "Hey, good job, boys, you know, and worked hard and, you know, keep up the good work." And Shane was like, you know, "Yeah, good job, guys, good job." And then they walked off, and then JR said, "We should be contacting you guys soon." And, a couple weeks goes by, and Brian Kendrick asked me, he goes, "Have y'all heard anything?" And I'm like, "No, have you?" He said, "No, who are we supposed to talk to?" And I'm like, "You guys had tryouts with these guys. You should have got phone numbers or emails or something." And I get it. It was a pretty intimidating, pretty intense experience that night. So Brian was like, "We didn't even think about that." I said, "Well, let me ask Sean." So I asked Sean, and Sean said, "They haven't heard nothing?" I said, "No, man, they were scared to death, man. They didn't know who to ask or what to ask, or they just did their thing and changed and went home. So Sean made a phone call, and then a couple of days goes by, so now we're about a month after their actual tryout, and Sean asked me if we heard anything. I said, nope. So Sean calls again, and he has JR on the phone, and he puts it on speaker, and JR says, you know what, we dropped the ball. We do have them down. We just haven't sent out the paperwork yet, or, you know, he went to a bunch of details and stuff. So at the end of the day, JR said, we're going to overnight them their contracts right now. And so the next day, Sean walked in with four FedEx envelopes, and there you go. A month and a half later, they were WWE, you know, contract developmental wrestlers.
My goodness, what a blessing. My geez Louise. Okay, you mentioned
those boys, man.
Football. Yeah, excuse me.
Those boys were, you know, and I'm not exaggerating, those boys were starving, man. They were, I took Brian and Brian one time to dinner, and they, you know, they were changing, and I had to, you know, I was waiting for them to change. I was in their apartment, and I peeked in the refrigerator, and they had tortillas and peanut butter. And while we were eating at dinner, I said, what was those tortillas and peanut butter and tortillas for? And Brian Kendrick said, we eat peanut butter tacos. That's all we can afford. And I'm like,
damn.
Jesus Christ, man. So when they got their contracts, they got back pay. So they got their contracts, and then they all had checks for, like, it might have been like $10,000, maybe $8,000.
Nice.
Maybe it was, yeah, somewhere around there. So they got back pay and stuff. And there was travel money involved in that also. And Lance kind of like, you know, when he opened up his deal, he pulled a check out and he was like, yes. And I mean, I've never seen kids smile so big in my life, man. It was, you know, I mean, I'm supposed to be the big, tough coach guy there. And I had tears come down my face. And I just like, you know, Sheeter Schultz was more quiet and reserved guy. So he just like smiled and shook his head, and Brian Danielson, you know, kind of like went down to a knee or, you know, found a little corner for himself. And then Brian Kendrick, he was like crying and gave me a hug and gave Sean a hug and thanked us. And I mean, those, you know, that was some life-changing stuff for those guys.
Definitely. That's very cool. Now, you mentioned you played football growing up. Did you play any other sports growing up or in high school?
I sucked. I played basketball in eighth grade, and, I mean, we had, like, a 15-game season, and I think my average was, like, 0.3 points a game or something. I mean, I was horrible. And then I played baseball, and my average was 0.00. I mean, I sucked at everything. I played football. I was very good at football. I ran track. I was pretty fast when I was younger, so I had a pretty good – I did the shot put, and I did the 440, and I did the 110, I think it's what it's called, the 110, 110-meter dash or whatever. And that was it, track and football. And, I mean, wrestling wasn't even part of the equation. We didn't have wrestling schools here in San Antonio for high school or anything like that, not at that time.
Okay. And then besides pro wrestling, what's your self-defense background?
Mexican judo. You don't know if I have a knife. You don't know if I have a gun. I don't have – I'm not a fighting guy, so I don't have any kind of mixed martial arts background or anything like that. I mean, I've gotten into fights and stuff, but, I mean, I've never I've never gotten into that stuff. It's just never appealed to me. And then, like I said, when I got into the wrestling school with Joe Blanchard, the guy that was running, his name was Larry Lane. And Larry Lane was like an all-Army wrestling champ and stuff. So any wrestling background I have is from him. And that was like 3 or 4 months of every day, Monday through Friday, you know, getting on the mats with him and getting stretched. And then every now and then Lou Thez would show up, and every now and then this guy named Ali Bay the Turk would show up, and then Nick Koniski would show up, and all those guys were shooters, man. And so if you didn't know what you were doing, you were in for a long, you know, 4 or 5 minutes on the mats with them. And I learned, you know, I learned that way. And but then it still wasn't enough because somebody suggested I should get into AAU tournaments around San Antonio. And they were just, you know, gatherings, I guess, of guys that were wrestling. And I was doing well doing that. It, you know, I was 170 or so, 168 or something like that. And it was just guys from around San Antonio. So I'd get on the mat with them, and we'd go, you know, do the three-minute rounds and stuff, and I'd beat them, and I thought I was a badass. And then someone said, you ought to go. There's an open tournament at Lubbock over in Texas Tech. So me and another guy went, and they had guys from Oklahoma. They had guys from Colorado. They had guys from, you know, everywhere, you know, under the sun. And I got on the mat with a guy from Tulsa, and he tied me up in a knot within seconds. And I was like, holy shit. And so, and then the next week, someone suggested entering a meet up in Austin, Texas at the School for the Deaf and Blind. And sure enough, I got a kid that was blind. And same thing, he tied me up in knots also. And so, I mean, my wrestling knowledge is very limited. I was never into kung fu or any of that other stuff or mixed martial arts, just pro wrestling. But as the years have gone by, you know, I've messed around with a little bit of different stuff here and there. So my knowledge is a little bit better than it was when I started.
Okay, nice. And let's see. So you've also had different characters like, well, names at least, Rudy Boy Gonzalez and now El Presidente. What other characters have you worked in wrestling?
I've always been me, man. I was Rudy Gonzalez because, you know, when you start, you know, if I would have started and said, hey, I want to be the, you know, the mechanic, they would have like, you know, get out of here, guy. When you start wrestling, you're just you, you know, you're just whoever you are. And that's who I was. I was Rudy Gonzalez for the longest time. And then I started going to Mexico and, there was a guy named, he was a soccer player at a Monterey. His name was Danny Boy. And we were kind of similar, resembled each other a little bit. And the promoter, she said, she mentioned something about us being cousins and, whatever works, you know, I don't care. I was just here to wrestle, you know? And so that's where the Rudy – his name was Danny Boy. I mean, that was his name, I think, Danny Boy. And so that's where the Rudy Boy Gonzalez came into play. And, you know, it kind of stuck. And that's where I've been ever since. El Presidente comes from a guy named Duke. He's a podcaster guy. And he called me one day and says, El Presidente. And I'm like, yeah. And so that kind of stuck also. But, I mean, I don't know if you knew about this or not, but years ago here in San Antonio, there was, like, a group of wrestlers that were trying to start a union. And so everybody called each other, and we all meet at this guy's house, and they're talking about trying to get benefits for everybody and all this other stuff, whatever. But we all had to pitch in $50 each to this fund. And so, obviously, being wrestlers, everybody was kind of like, you know, wait a minute, you know, who's going to watch the money and stuff like that. And then at the same time, they voted for a president, and I got voted for as the president. And so that lasted like 3 weeks, though, because nobody wanted to donate, nobody wanted to pitch in $50, and you know, it became, you know, don't work for these guys, but you can only work for these guys. And then some of the guys were like, no, you know, yeah, stuff like that. So it didn't work. It only lasted 3 weeks, but I was the president, and I haven't been voted out yet. So that was like in 85, I guess.
Okay. All right. And then in your career, who have been your favorite people to work with?
That's a good question. I always like working with Brian Danielson, Brian Kendrick, Paul London, any of my students. I, you know, just because I want to see what they can do and stuff like that. I wrestled with Buddy Roberts one night, and, you know, he just, I was about a year, 2 years into the business, still green, you know, even though I was getting matches, 2-3 shows a week and stuff like that, still green, but Buddy Roberts made me look like $1 million. I mean, he just, all he told me in the back was just listen, kid, you know, and I did. And, I mean, he had the crowd, you know, I'm not even going to try and say I had the crowd cheering. He had the crowd cheering for me and chanting and all that stuff. And then Larry Zbyszko, I worked with, I had a match with him a couple of times. Same thing. He had the crowd going, and I learned a lot from those two guys. I had a match with Black Bart here in San Antonio. Same thing. I mean, it's working, you know, getting in the ring with guys like that. It's like an education. It's like a clinic in itself. Those are the three guys that stand out the most, really. I mean, Eric Embry was always good to work with. I hate saying that word work. Ken Timms was always a good guy to wrestle with. I mean, I got to have a few matches with him before he left the territory. And again, it was just, you know, just a matter of just listening to the guys. And same thing, like I said earlier, is just like, you know, just, you know, headlock, you know, and bam, you grab a headlock. Do this, you know, it's just little, we never called anything in the back like the guys do today. And, you know, who else was there? those are the main guys, man. I wrestled with a guy out of Mexico. His name was Aaron Du. And Aaron Du was like the Santos Escobar, but of 1988 or whatever. I mean, he was a very, very good guy in the ring. And he always did some crazy stuff and whatever. And you know, it was always fun to get in the ring with him because he always did something different, always did something new, and you're like, holy cow, you know. And getting in the ring with guys like that make you want to work just as hard or harder. Mainly those guys.
Okay, definitely. And then in your career, you've wrestled some of the toughest wrestlers in the world. Who would you list as some of your toughest opponents?
Good question. Man, and obviously, you know, Bruiser Brody's going to have to be way up there at the top. I've had matches. I've had like 3 or 4 matches with him. And every time he's told me, you know, fight back. And I do my best to lay my stuff in, and like it never fazed him. Killer Tim Brooks was a tough guy to get in the ring with. Chavo Guerrero was tough, not tough as in physical tough. It was just that Chavo was like a mentor to me, and so I had a match with him, and I wanted so hard to show him that I wasn't some dumb green kid anymore, that I knew what I was doing, and, you know, there was like a mental block there that instead of worrying about the match, I was worried about me, but I was trying to worry about the match also, but I was trying to prove to him that I could do whatever, and, I mean, I exhausted myself trying to do that, you know. And in the back, he was like, you know, didn't do bad. Good job. He goes, well, what's wrong with you? And I was Chavo. And I'm like, I'm just trying to show you, man. And he was like, you don't have to show me nothing, man. He said, you don't have to show me shit. He said, you just go out there and do what you got to do, and I'll figure it out myself. He goes, but other than that, he goes, you didn't do bad. And, you know, I mean, but physical, I mean, tough opponents, man. I mean, wrestling being the way it is, I've been in the ring with a bunch of legitimately tough guys, but I've said it before. I mean, I tell my students this, no one ever abused me. No one ever you know, I never came out of the ring with a black eye or something from somebody trying to, you know, let me show you I'm a veteran, you know, or anything like that.
You know what I mean?
I mean, I Dick Slater was a tough dude, and I had a couple of matches with him, and you know, I mean, I don't want to knock down that fourth wall, but I mean, you know, I guess I'm gonna do it anyway. But I mean, he was just so easy to get in the ring with and do stuff with. It's just, you know, who else? I mean, those are the main guys. Like Brody's like the main guy, really. I mean, I've seen him kick guys' heads off, and I'm like, oh my god, yeah, I guess he's having a bad day. But then he gets in, you know, then I get in the ring with him, and you know, he's cool as shit.
Nice. Okay, and then what are your suggestions for people wanting to get into the business?
That is the best question you've asked so far. But I mean, you have to want it, man. I mean, simple as that. And it's not none of this cosplay stuff. It's, I mean, you have to. Obviously, But I see it as, if you're in the wrestling business, you want to go as far as you want to, as far as you can take it. If you get any kind of business, you want to take it. You want to go as far as you can go with it. Whether it's plumbing, whether it's landscaping, whether it's whatever, fireman, doctor. I'm sure everybody, you know, you want to take it as far as you can. Wrestling's no different. So, I mean, treat it as, you know, 2024, everybody knows wrestling's whatever you want to call it. But it's still hard work, and it's still a business, and there's still a lot of opportunity out there. And if you go out there with the mindset that, you know, you're just there for a cup of coffee and you know, whatever comes, you're wasting people's time. And for me, I can't stand that. You know, there's no guarantees, obviously, in this business. But if you go out there with the attitude of working your tail off and if there's no opportunity to create opportunities, but you try and take advantage of every opportunity you can, and, you know, get your face out there and do the, you know, the dumb stuff, I guess you could say, that, you know, guys are like, you know, I should have to pass out flyers. Like right now, I'm passing out flyers for a show I'm doing next Sunday. 42 years in the business and still passing out flyers. But that's how I was taught, though. That's how I was brought up, you know. Take every advantage that you can. I mean, if I don't do it, who else is going to do it? So, you know,
absolutely,
do whatever you can to get ahead, you know, and you're going to hit a lot of walls. You're going to hit a lot of rejection. You're going to hit a lot of, you know, you're going to a lot of failure. But, I mean, all that stuff leads up to, you know, the end, which is going to be success, or should be success. So just, you know, just do what you can, and don't let stuff – you know, deter you from your goal.
Definitely. And that's exactly what I was going to say next was, man, you're a busy guy. You're out there. I see you're out there today at a festival handing out flyers. Tell people where you're at and what you got coming up.
I'm in Harlingen, Texas right now. It's about 250 miles south of San Antonio. So I tried to get here at the start of business, which, you know, is about 8-9 o'clock, but I didn't get here that early. But I still in San Antonio at 6 in the morning. It's a 4-hour drive, so I got here about 10:30 or so, and just passing out flyers. Coincidentally, thank God, there's a festival here, so I have 2,500 flyers, so I was, you know, passing them all out and stuff, but I can't pass them all at one place, so I'm kind of like trying to get around town or whatever. And so this show is next Sunday at the Elks Lodge, and they're gracious enough to allow us to come in periodically and run our events in their place. And, you know, I mean, my goal is to, it's maybe not the right thing to say, but my goal is to, I mean, I run the school, obviously, so is to give my students a chance to be in front of a crowd, whether it's 5 people or it's 500 people or 5,000, just get in front of a crowd and perform. And I mean, again, this is the way I was raised. So, I mean, they don't see, maybe some of the students don't see the importance of passing out these flyers, but I can't do a show and have nobody in the chairs and say, well, nobody passed out flyers, so I guess we got to wrestle in front of nobody. I can't, you know, I can't let that happen. So, you know, maybe the students have other things to do. Maybe, I don't know. I'm not going to ask them. I just, you know, all I know is that when I was breaking in, when I was coming in, if, you know, if stuff needed to be done, I did it. And I didn't, a lot of times I didn't have to be asked. I knew it had to be done. And if I didn't do it, if nobody else was going to do it, then I was going to do it, whatever it was. And that's the same mentality that I have now, 42 years later. Because, I mean, again, like I said, if no one else is going to do it, you know, then what's going to happen? Someone has to take the initiative to make something happen. So, maybe I'm putting too much out here, but am I upset? A little bit, but I understand it's 2024. Guys don't see the importance of this stuff anymore. Guys don't see, you know, it's just not the same as it was in 1984, where if nobody did the job or the work, you didn't get work. If you didn't take the initiative to pass out flyers, don't expect to work. Don't walk up to me and say, you know, hey, am I booked on the show? Because no, you're not booked on the show because you didn't help to promote it. And I mean, and that's the attitude that I have, even today. So and I know it's 2024. Views have changed a little bit, you know, and that's too bad. But you know, I get it. You know.
Yes, for sure. And then, what other schools and your school would you like to tell people about?
So, you know, I see guys all the time. They'll message me from, we'll say, Idaho. And I don't know nobody in Idaho. And they'll ask me, do you know any schools, any good schools in Idaho? And I don't know anybody. So, no, I don't. Can you suggest to me any schools? Yeah, well, we're, you know, there's me. You know, of course, I'm going to put myself over. There's me. There's Booker T in Houston. There's Ohio Valley in Louisville, Kentucky. There's Tom Pritchard's place in Knoxville, Tennessee. There's the Santino's Brothers place in California. Brian Kendrick has a school in Los Angeles. Paul London has a school in out in that area also. Where do you want to go? Well, they're too far.
Yeah, exactly.
They're too, well, you know, and that's not, I mean, it, so they'll start their own school. You know, they don't know anything, but they're going to start their own school. But I mean, you know, I suggest guys mainly to Brian Kendricks, who's out of Los Angeles, or Paul London, who's out of Los Angeles also. I think their schools are like 20 minutes apart. I mean, I trained them both, so I mean, I know they're good guys. Plus, they've been around a little bit. There's a kid named Moonshine Mantell out of the Kansas City area, and I trained him also, so I know he does a good job. Then there's Booker, and then obviously in Knoxville, Tennessee, there's Tom Pritchard, and then there's Ohio Valley. And then after that, I mean, Florida, there's the WWN out of, I think they're out of Clearwater. And then there's the Dudley Boys. And then after that, man, I really don't stick my neck out too much because I don't really know too much about a lot of the guys. I know there's a lot of schools out there that shouldn't be running. And, you know, so I don't want to say, yeah, go to this place. And it's really not a good place to go to. So I'm kind of reserved on the ones that, like the ones I just mentioned, those are ones that I suggest to guys.
Definitely. Man, I really enjoy all that you do for wrestling and your wrestling mind, and I love watching your posts that you post some of the crazy stunts people doing out there that for a hot dog and a handshake. I mean, my goodness, it's just amazing what goes on out there.
A hot dog drink and a handshake now.
Yeah, goodness.
You haven't seen that? The hot dog and whatever, mustard soda or whatever it's called? I don't know if they sell it at 7-Eleven, I think.
Gosh,
yeah.
No. That don't even sound good, does it? My God.
Not at all. But no, man, I mean, I don't post those videos to make fun of anybody. I mean, at one time I did because they are kind of dumb. But then I started like one kid messaged me and I think he did a leg drop off the second balcony somewhere, and he sent me a message. I posted the video, and I put, like, LOL, what an idiot, or something like that. And so this guy messages me and he goes, I'm glad you got a laugh out of it. I broke my hip and I broke my leg and I can't walk that well and all this. Yeah. And I was like, you know, it's.
Yeah.
It's
I'm sure you don't
stunt.
Post it for that. Yeah.
Yeah. And
exactly.
And it's like, you know what? So I started, I still post them, but it's, you know, if I didn't know who that guy was, but I still post them just mainly to see who the, because someone's going to message me and say, oh, that's my friend Mark, you know, and I'll message that person and say, can you give me Mark's information? And I'll message him and say, hey, are you okay? Or what happened with that? Or,
yeah.
You know, and out of concern. And just like, you know, I mean, I get it. A lot of guys, I mean, when I broke in, you know, there were some of us that were like, hey, what if I try this? And there was always somebody like, no, you know, and now I'm sure in the dressing rooms, there's somebody that's like, hey, let me try this. And then instead of someone saying no, there's someone that says, hey, that'd be pretty cool. Why don't you do it this way? Why don't you do it? And there's no control in the dressing room. So they do these stunts. Sometimes they come out okay and sometimes they don't. So, I try and reach out to the guys to make one to make sure they're okay. And just to let them know, you know, I mean, you don't have to do it that way. You know, you don't, you know, I've never really done, well, I'm not going to say never. I did a couple of goofy moves in my younger day, and now I'm older, you know, and I feel them. I don't, you know, it's a little bit harder to get up sometimes or, and I didn't even do anything really extreme. I just maybe a corkscrew bump from the ring to the concrete floor, and you know, I felt my hip kind of like not feel right, and I thought I broke my hip, and I didn't. I'm like everybody else. I didn't have insurance, so I had to like deal with it for a couple of weeks till the pain went away. And I mean, I didn't take drugs or anything, but I had to like deal with it for a couple of weeks. I probably cracked my hip. I probably bruised it or something. But you know, guys are like, I just saw a deal where a guy did a back chop, I think, or some kind of flip onto a bed of nails, and he just put his hand down in time to not get his face with those nails. And I'm like, dude, what the, you know, I mean, what do you tell your kids? What do you tell your wife or your parents when you come home? Well, some guy slammed me into a piece of plywood with nails in it and I stuck a nail in my eyeball, you know. This is wrestling, dude. This
goodness.
Isn't, you know.
Yeah, I know. That's not wrestling. My God. What? That's some freak show stuff.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we did, guys did stuff like that back in the day, but it was controlled. It was, you know, and there was a reason for it. Maybe a couple of months, me and you were going back and forth and finally had this big match where, you know, this is going to be the end-all, be-all match. And so we do stuff. But everything is controlled, though. Everything is, you know, I mean, some of these guys are doing stuff just, you know, like they just thought of something last night while drinking beer, you know?
Yeah, geez. Okay, and then who are some of the up-and-comers that people should keep their eye on?
Moonshine Mantell, I just mentioned him a little while ago. I mean, he's been working for about... He's been wrestling for about 6 years now, but I mean, I have no clue why. I don't know what what WWE looks for, or even AEW, but I mean, he should be under someone's contract. I mean, you know, and maybe he just doesn't get. I don't know. I don't know what the reasons are, but maybe he doesn't get out enough. I don't know, but I mean, he is a star. I mean, he could do really well on NXT or Collision or one of those shows. Max Castellano is another guy. He's in Philadelphia. He does a lot of extra work for WWE, and so right now he's in Philadelphia. I'm not sure if he's going to do anything tonight or tomorrow or Monday, or if he did anything, you know, with NXT. But I mean, he's had a tryout or two, and he's on their radar. Tony Batista is another one. He's up in the New Jersey area, another guy I trained. And I'm not saying I'm not bringing these guys' names up because I trained them. It's just they're very talented. They're very good. They have they check all the boxes. Nobby Bryant, I did not train him, but he's up in the Dallas area, and he's very talented, very good, superstar-looking kid. There's a kid named Stonewall Remsen. I think he just changed his name, though. First of all, I saw him was about 2 years ago, and overweight and didn't really have a look. He had a look, but a sloppy look. And over the last couple of years, man, he's been cleaning himself up. Rick Savage is a beast. My wife, girlfriend, whatever you want to call her, Micah, she's on WOW right now, but I mean, she could fit into NXT easily. A hard little worker. She goes to work for Al Snow every now and then over at OVW. She does Shine. I'm not saying it because that's my girl or nothing. I'm just saying she's very talented, smart, always asking questions. I mean, a lot of girls, you know, that I've seen try and cut corners and, you know, smile their way through. Not all of them, but, you know, there are some that are out there that do that. Micah's not that way. She, you know, asks questions and tries to learn and get better.
Awesome.
Who else? Barrett Brown is one that he's been wrestling for a while. He's been wrestling since he was like, I don't know, I'm just
8 years old. maybe not that young, but he's been around for a while, but he's just not getting that break.
I don't know why these guys aren't signed or picked up, or I don't know what the requirements are, but I mean, Barrett's one of those guys, man. He should be up there. You know, I know he does some stuff with NWA. I know he did stuff with New Japan, but nothing has stuck though.
Definitely. Okay. And then let's see, this next segment is called Favorites. I'm sure the fans and Sign Guy would like to know what your favorite coffee to drink is if you drink coffee.
My favorite coffee drink? I drink Folgers, I guess. Or if I go to Starbucks, I'll get a cappuccino and two extra shots of espresso.
Okay. And then another thing that makes me feel good that we have in common, I see you also post, you're riding down the road listening to Hair Nation. I do that myself. So the next question
Go ahead.
The next question is, what have been your favorite concerts you've been to?
Kiss. I went to a... I can't think of his name. The country dude. Yeah, I can't think of his name. Anyway, I went to one of this guy's concerts, and it was really, you know, I don't go to country concerts very much, and I went to this guy's, and God, I can't think of his name. And it's very good. The guy that sings There Goes My Life.
I'm not a huge country fan, so yeah. That's not a good enough clue for me yet.
But I like Jason Aldean. I haven't gone to his concerts. I like Jason Aldean. I like Toby Keith. Rest in peace.
Yes.
You know, I mean, I really don't go to concerts too much. I honestly, man, I mean, if someone said, you know, besides wrestling, what do you do? Nothing. I mean, I spend time. Now that I'm older, I spend time with my daughter, Ivy, and at home. And or if I can, I'll spend some time with my son, Steve, and Deanna. They're older. And my daughter, Jackie, has a one-and-a-half-year-old, so I'm a grandfather. If I can, I'll spend time with them a little bit here and there. But, I mean, usually I'm on the road, man. I didn't want to go to see, like, we have a professional football team here in San Antonio called the San Antonio Brahmas. I can't go see them because when they play, we're on the road somewhere. Jason Aldean was in San Antonio a while back, and we were on the road. You know, I don't really have a life after wrestling. And I'm not saying that with regret. That's just how I planned it out, I guess.
You're a busy man, yes. And then you mentioned the Dallas Cowboys and San Antonio Brahmas, but in your lifetime,
right,
what have been your favorite sports teams?
Dallas Cowboys. Dallas Cowboys all my life. All my life.
What about baseball and basketball?
I'm not a baseball fan. I'm not really a basketball fan. I mean, we got the Spurs here, and but I'm not really a Spurs fan either. It's they had their good years when they had Duncan and Tony Parker and David Robinson and Manu Ginobili and those guys, but now those guys are gone, and so the team's not doing so well. We have a kid named Victor Wembanyama or something like that.
Yes,
and,
he's a rising star.
Well, I mean, our record doesn't show that, but he's also a young guy. And, like, so the news guys, the sports guys here, I mean, in San Antonio, they kill him because, you know, he's 7 feet tall, and, you know, I guess they expected all of a sudden for the Spurs to be undefeated or something. But, I mean, it takes more than one guy to field a team, you know. And the poor kid came from the French league, so I don't think they're comparable to the NBA. So it's going to take, I think it's going to take a couple of years for him to reach his full potential. But I'm not really a Spurs fan though.
Okay, all right, man. We're down here to the end, so we got time for you to give some shout outs, your schedule, and how people get a hold of you.
Mainly my shout-outs now are just wrestling school stuff. I mean, I run the Texas Wrestling Academy. It used to be the Shawn Michaels Wrestling Academy. The list of guys that have come out of that school and gone on to bigger and better things is long and illustrious. I dedicate as much time as possible to my school. We're open. We have training sessions from 10 o'clock in the morning till noon, and then again from 7 to 9. But, man, I'm there basically all day. Sometimes, I'm telling you the truth, sometimes I'm just sitting there staring at the ring just because there's just so much that has happened in that ring, magic and moments and that we've created. And there's so much more that can be that can be done, you know, in that squared area, you know, 18 by 18 area. And so, I mean, if I'm not at home, I'm at the gym, and you'll see me post on social media. I'm cleaning the ring. I just bought some padding to go around the ring so that if anyone happens to fall out of the ring, that they don't fall in the concrete and break their skull open. They, at least there's a pad there, there's a mat there. And it's not gymnastics. I mean, it's not, you know, the play school, you know. I mean, I got good padding so that, you know, I mean, the guys are taken care of. I mean, the way I see it is I charge a lot of money to train guys, and if I'm going to charge them that kind of money, I will invest as much as I can into my school and you, the student, to get as much out of that, whatever you're paying, as possible. And if it means us sitting around, you know, us sitting there all day, then so be it. You know, I've got, you know, I love my wife and my daughter, but wrestling's always been my thing. And, you know, if I'm not at home, I'm at the gym. And those are, you know, that's where I'm at. So, I mean, you know, Texas Wrestling Academy is what I, you know, what I have. And I've been given the, I've been blessed to be called into the Performance Center to come in as a guest trainer. And I don't take that for granted at all. I mean, I'm around some high-level athletes and some high-level coaches, and I take it in just like everybody else, like a sponge. And I try and bring that back to my school to help my students. So, I mean, if anyone wants to get a hold of me, you know, there's Texas Wrestling Academy on email, TexasWrestlingAcademy_SA@yahoo.com. You can pull up our website. It's TX Wrestling Academy, .com. My phone number, I don't mind giving it out, is 210-326-1520. What else? I mean, if you can send a smoke signal my direction, and if I see it, I mean, whatever. If you want to message me on Messenger, or, I mean, I'm very accessible to, you know, to everybody. I try and keep my wrestling school prices affordable. I'm not Booker T. I'm not Shawn Michaels. You know, I'm just me. But, you know, I know what I offer guys. I know what I can do for guys.
Definitely. Man, we thank you so much, El Presidente. And I wish you all the luck in the world. Thank you for your time and your story and what you do for wrestling. We really appreciate you, brother.
Hey, Mike, I appreciate the time you've given me. I mean, you don't have to have me on here on this Saturday, WrestleMania afternoon. You could be watching NXT right now. You could be watching a replay of the Hall of Fame speeches. You can be doing any other thing. I really, you know, I don't take any of this for granted. I really do appreciate it. I thank you very much, man.
You're welcome, brother. Thank you again. And there you go, everybody. El Presidente, Rudy Boy Gonzalez, thank you again. Yes, here
thank
in the
you.
Northwest. You're welcome, brother. Mariners are in Milwaukee today, hoping to get back on track. Man, WrestleMania weekend, looking forward to that. We thank all of you for your time and for your support, your feedback, and your love, and everything you guys do. We appreciate it so much. I want to say thank you to Sign Guy and Turnbuckle Turmoil, QT and JD for creating Turnbuckle Turmoil, and for Sign Guy getting me my own show, and for all the guidance and everything. And we want to I appreciate all of you guys, and especially Joe Love and the Never Were for my ring song and walk-on song, the Coach Mike Jones Show walk-on song by the Never Were and Joe Love. Thank you so much. Love you, and have a great weekend.
That's right, everybody. You know who it is. Coach Mike Jones on the coach with the most. Coming at you hard from coast to coast. I don't want to boast, but now I got to roast you in my social media posts. You double dose, a diagnose. You feeling tired, life expired, now you're a ghost. I'll be your host, so won't you raise a toast to the coach with the most, Coach Mike Jones. Everybody say Coach Mike Jones.